Today's episode is in honor of Jeremy Brett, who was born today, November 3rd, in 1933. Brett appeared in 41 episodes of the Granada television series of The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes between 1984 and 1994. For many, he is the definitive Sherlock Holmes. And so, episode 10 is for you, Mr. Brett. Happy birthday!
They call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street babes always leave the rest of them behind. Oh. So when Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your.
And Curly is here with author Charlotte Ann Walters, who recently published Barefoot on Baker Street and is also the grand blogger of doing all the canon stories one a day, like a crazy person. So yes, hello Charlotte.
Hello, good to talk to you.
So I guess first off, I want to ask you sort of like our basic questions. How did you get into Sherlock Holmes?
Oh, well, I did start reading the Sherlock Holmes books when I was very young. I remember being given some pocket money and going to the second-hand book market in Bridge North and picking up a Sherlock Holmes book and reading it, which I think was actually the young Sherlock Holmes, but I really enjoyed reading it and then started to use my pocket money to buy other books in the canon. I also very much enjoyed watching the Granada series with Jeremy Brett, which I used to sit and watch with my mom. You know, that was a fantastic adaptation and really drew me in and made me a lot more interested in Sherlock Holmes. And then when I was doing my A-levels, I particularly remember, you know, all the stress of A-levels and coursework and exams and so on. But I used to sort of curl up in bed with a hot chocolate and a Sherlock Holmes book, and it was a brilliant bit of escapism.
So I guess you would say the Granada adaptation your favourite, or?
I did enjoy Basil Rathbone's performance very much, and even though they were set in a slightly later period and didn't necessarily adhere to the original stories, I did think that Basil Rathbone played a very sort of courteous and sensitive Sherlock Holmes. But I have to say, yes, Jeremy Brett is my favourite, and I do think that Granada did a fantastic job.
I'm sure many, many people would agree with you.
Yeah. So, yes, yes.
Now, your book is obviously set in the time of Sherlock Holmes, late Victorian London.
Yes. So,
do you have the fascination with the period? Is it something that you want to continue writing about, or is it just something you kind of fancy?
Well, it was a challenging period to write about, because obviously you have to do your research. You know, it has to be authentic. Mm-hmm. And that can interrupt your flow, because you'll have a brilliant plot line in your head and you'll start furiously typing away, and then you'll suddenly think, hang on, did they have lemonade in Victorian England? And then you start writing and you have to Wikipedia lemonade and see when exactly it was that lemonade came into being and was it called lemonade and so forth. So it was quite restrictive. But on the other hand, yes, it's a really interesting period of history because it was such a period of social change. Of course, you know, Britain going through the Industrial Revolution, and the City of London was so overcrowded, and it was such a city of extremes as well. On the one hand, you had the sort of new rich, you know, people that were industrialists and capitalists and really profiting from the Industrial Revolution, but they were living side by side with people who were in desperate poverty, who travelled into the city in the hope of work, which obviously thousands of people did. The housing was inadequate, the facilities were inadequate to take such a number of people. The work wasn't as plentiful as a lot of people thought when they drifted in from the countryside. And they came sort of full of hopes and dreams and landed up just finding terrible poverty. And the fact that the two classes were living so close to each other.
Right.
And there was such a veneer of respectability, but seething away underneath all that was a lot of corruption and a lot of sexual immorality as well. So I think it was a very interesting period of contrasts and also an interesting period of change.
Fabulous answer. So your character, Red, you wrote it as a first-person narrative.
Yes.
Is that because you sort of wanted to inhabit her character to sort of wander around Victorian London, or was there a different reason, just for fun?
I wrote it in the first person because I wanted it to be in the form of a memoir. I wanted it to feel very personal so that people could fully engage with the character and follow her on her journey and understand her a little bit deeper as well. So I felt that I could convey that better doing it in the form of a journal or a memoir than from a sort of distant standpoint, really.
Yeah, I'm not quite finished with it. I'm about maybe like 60% done, but I'm enjoying it.
Oh, brilliant. Okay.
It's quite different from anything else I've sort of read in the sort of genre, because it's a pastiche, but not quite. It's more of Red's story, I feel, than anything else.
It is, and it's meant to be. It started off being very much a Sherlock Holmes story, and, you know, I started it 7 years ago when Sherlock Holmes had rather slipped out of the mainstream. This was compared to the Guy Ritchie film of prior to BBC Sherlock, and I wanted to write something that would bring people back to the Sherlock Holmes character, and I suppose perhaps a little bit like Guy Ritchie, I wanted to show his physical side, you know, show him as a bit more of a brave action hero character. But as I started to write, the character of Red came forward and her voice got stronger and stronger in my head, and in the end I decided that it would be very interesting to see Sherlock Holmes from the standpoint of somebody other than Dr. Watson, and to view him through the eyes of a young girl, I thought was quite an interesting concept and decided to go with it, and that's what the book became.
Yeah, and it is a massive, massive book. How long did it take you to write this?
It's an epic tale. It took me 7 years, but throughout that period I was, of course, working full-time. It wasn't writing constantly, it was fitting it in and fitting in the research around running a full-time job and meeting my husband, getting married, having my stepchildren come into my life, buying my first home. So I've grown up along with the book, really. We kind of evolved together, and it was, you know, I didn't have the time to write full time, so it's had to be fitted in where I could, which obviously slows down the process. But I think it also gives you time to let the book breathe and let it evolve and find its own voice and direction a little bit.
Are you looking to write anymore? Is this a one-shot, or are you thinking of writing some more?
I'd love to. I would love to write more. There's definitely more books in me, and they're straining to get out of the way. You know, a bit constricted time-wise, because, as you know, I'm doing my epic blogging adventure and still working full-time and doing other bits of social media around the book. And I've got further ambitions for the book. I very, very much want to turn it into a screenplay of some sorts as well.
Oh, fun.
Which would be amazing if I can sort out, you know, how to make that dream a reality. So a lot on my plate at the moment. I want to give a definite answer, but there's certainly more books in there and they are desperate to come out. So who knows?
Awesome. And we can do like a perfect segue into your crazy blogging adventure. I guess perhaps do a short explanation for those who don't quite know what you're doing.
Basically, it's called 56 Stories in 56 Days. And I'm reading and reviewing one Sherlock Holmes short story every day until I've covered all 56.
That is a grand undertaking.
It's a massive undertaking. You know, it sounded like a really good idea when I thought of it. I thought, yeah, that'd be really fun. You know, I'd love to go back and revisit the Sherlock Holmes stories. That'd be a lovely thing to do. And then the reality kicks in of trying to do it and, you know, trying to sit and write it on the train on the way back from work, and you can't get a seat and you land up sort of sitting on the floor in the toilet on the train with the laptop out trying to write your blog. it's a challenging experience, but at the same time it is enjoyable. It is brilliant to go back to some of those stories that I haven't read for quite some time.
Yeah, like how long has it been since you've read like some of them? Has it been like years and years?
Yeah, with some of them it has, because the stories that relate to my book, in Barefoot I use a lot of things from the original canon. So we take the story of the Blue Carbuncle, the Empty House, the Final Problem, and I work those into my own tale and run them pretty much exactly as they run in the original story, but just from a different perspective or adding a different, a new character. So those stories I've read over and over again, and my Penguin complete Sherlock Holmes, it has that many crossings out, notes in the margins, lines on it, pages turned over. It's literally falling to bits. But other stories I haven't read for years. I've been so focused on the stories that I've been using in my novel and making sure that I know those stories absolutely inside out so that I can write them as authentically as possible that I suppose I've neglected some of the others. So this has given me an opportunity to go back to them.
So I like that when you're doing this, you're not sort of saying they're all brilliant and fantastic. You're actually looking at them almost with sort of like a hard eye. And has that caused like any sort of like controversy for you? Or are people generally like, yeah, they're not all amazing?
People don't always agree with the blog, and that's fine. You know, there's comments on there, and if people feel differently, as long as they comment in a nice and polite way, that's fine. I love prompting discussion. And I think, you know, that's what I did with my book as well. I did purposely try to write something that was different, that just pushed the boundaries of the genre a little bit to get people talking, you know, to deal with some of those difficult questions about Sherlock Holmes, you know, about his possible autism, about, you know, his relationship with women and so forth. I like prompting debate. So, yes, there have been some people that have disagreed, but that's fine. An awful lot of people have agreed as well. And I think I'm rating the stories in relation to each other as well, not in relation to general works of fiction. So the body of work as a whole, I love and would give a complete 10 out of 10. But in relationship to each other, some stories I enjoy more than others. And I've just been completely honest and put that opinion forward.
And I think that is completely valid.
Thank you. Good, good.
So what's one that you haven't read for a long time and that maybe you've discovered you really, really loved, or on vice versa, that you aren't that big of a fan of?
Wow. I'd forgotten how much I'd loved Charles Augustus Milverton. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. You know, I read it again and thought, yeah, fantastic. I enjoyed the Granada adaptation. I enjoy the Granada episodes that have particularly good actors in. And Robert Hardy played Charles Augustus Milverton, and he played it to perfection. But reading the story again, you know, reading the original, I just realised how much I loved it. And what a fantastic villain Milverton is. Brilliant.
He really is. He's a nasty piece of work.
You know, he's such a rival for Moriarty as well.
Yeah.
And the Six Napoleons. I hadn't read that for a long time, and I you know, forgotten how much I enjoyed that. What a perfect, neat, concise little story. What a brilliant example of all the things we love about Sherlock Holmes. But what was the other one that I really enjoyed as well? Do you know, they all go out of my head slightly. You write it, and then you move on to the next one the following day.
Yeah, you're going through them so rapidly.
Well, yeah, there is that. You know, there isn't that much time for reflection, really, because you go to bed and you wake up the following morning and you start on another one. But there's certainly some that have come back and, oh, The Yellow Face. I mean, that's obviously a wonderful story as well. And I've forgotten how lovely that was and what a great ending it had. Whereas there was others like The Orange Pips, which in my head, when I came to do it, I thought, oh, yes, I really like The Orange Pips. And actually, I didn't, really, and I didn't give that a very good score.
Not very exciting.
The fact that the truth sort of comes out without Holmes doing anything, when you actually break it down, Holmes doesn't do an awful lot. And I tend to prefer the stories where Holmes himself brings about the truth through his own sort of observation and investigations, rather than where the truth sort of comes out on its own, I suppose. But once again, you know, that's very much a personal opinion.
Oh, how far along are you? You're getting close to the end.
No, I've still got quite a way to go. I think I finish on, I think it's something like the 10th of November that I finish. I feel like I've still got a long way to go. I still feel kind of knee-deep in it. You know, today I've been doing the second stain, which isn't even finished yet, so I've got to finish that on the way home and get that up on the site.
Oh, dear.
Yes, exactly. So I still feel like I've got a big mountain to climb.
You've gotten the majority of them done. Sort of.
Oh, yeah, I think I'm past the midway point, I think, now, which is, you know, which is great. But it's like running a marathon, isn't it? Sometimes it's those last few miles that are the hardest. So I have very much enjoyed the experience. As I say, it's been lovely to go back and revisit. It's like revisiting old friends and popping around for a cup of tea. It is lovely to go back and read the stories again. It's just trying to fit it in is a bit challenging.
Random question. If you could have a cup of tea with anyone from the Sherlock Holmes world, who would you have a cup of tea with?
Oh, that's a good question. Oh, that's really difficult. That's really hard to narrow it down. Do you know, can I have two?
No, you can have. Okay, here, I'll give you this. Who would you have a cup of tea with, and who would you have an elegant dinner with?
Right. Oh, I'd probably have an elegant dinner with Dr. Watson. I think he's just such a wonderful, rounded and human character, and I imagine he's somebody that you could sit and have a really, really good chat over dinner with. As much as I'd love to meet Sherlock Holmes and chat with him, I actually think I'd be terrified of him. I think he'd scare me. So probably I'd go out for dinner with Dr. Watson, and I'd love to have a cup of tea with my favourite minor character, which is Kitty Winter, who I think's so spirited and I really like her very much, so that would probably be my cup of tea person.
Oh, that's fabulous. So when you finish this big project, are you planning to sort of compile it all together and because people do like sort of those blogger books, or are you just going to leave it up there on the website? Do you have any further aspirations for it?
It will certainly stay on the website so that people can discover it and read through. I'll be doing a summary at the end. I'll do at least one blog, maybe even a couple of blogs, summing up the statistics, I suppose, the scores, which books scored the most and the least, etc., which stories attracted the most attention on the site. No plans at the moment to turn it into a book. However, if my publisher were to contact me and ask me, Steve at MX Publishing, then I would. Hint, hint. I would certainly look at that for him, but no plans to do that at the moment, just to carry on with the promotion of Barefoot on Baker Street and, try and get it out there to as many people as possible.
Sure. Now, you mentioned November 10th, which is, of course, MX Publishing's The Great Sherlock Holmes Debate.
Yes.
All this craziness is coming into.
Absolutely. Quite nervous about it already, to be honest.
Yeah, we are too.
Yes, I wanted to do BBC Sherlock Proud. I thought the series was fantastic, and I feel the weight on my shoulders that I'm representing them of sorts. I want to do a really good job for them. The weight's on your shoulders even more. Yes.
Yeah, so I'm right there with you. Anna, what are your thoughts on the debate? Like, why did you first get interested in it, I suppose?
Well, I suppose because I think it's very important to keep the genre of Sherlock Holmes alive, so you need to be discussing the future and the best way to do that. I think the debate isn't about which adaptation is best, it's about which adaptation has the most sort of influence on the future of the character of Sherlock Holmes and bringing people into the brand and so forth. And I feel that BBC Sherlock does that very well, because even though it's set in a different period, it retains the essence of the original stories. And I think if you watch Sherlock and then you go and pick up a Sherlock Holmes book, I think you'll really enjoy the book. I think it's a really good introduction, whereas the Guy Ritchie film, I feel, being very action-based, possibly the young lads that have loved the Guy Ritchie film would pick up the Sherlock Holmes book and it wouldn't be quite what they were expecting. I don't think it's quite such a good introduction to the character, but I don't think the debate's about knocking one thing or the other. It's just, discussing the merits of each and which will have the most sort of long-term impact on the character Sherlock Holmes and how we look at Holmes in the future.
I pretty much agree on all parts.
But I don't mean to be rude. I'm going to have to run to get my train now,
No, that is
and I need
fine.
to catch it so that I can carry on blogging. I hope you don't mind, but it's been fantastic to talk to you, and thank you very much for your interest. I hope you love the rest of my book.
Yeah, I will definitely let you know once I finish
Please
it.
do. Oh, that's brilliant. Well, it's lovely to talk to you. Thank you ever so much.
Thank you.
Take care now.
You too.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Bye bye.
Okay, and I am here with author Dan Andriacco, who is author of Baker Street Beat, No Police Like Holmes, and hope to be much more mystery novels. So thank you for joining me on this, what is it, Tuesday afternoon?
Well, it's a great honor. I can't believe I'm speaking to the Baker Street Babes. Would you
Uh-huh.
please autograph my telephone?
Gladly. So, of course, you're about to be inducted as an honorary Baker Street Babe, because we're going to ask you, well, I guess I'm going to ask you the ultimate questions here. Are you ready?
Wow. I hope so.
So I guess first off, how did you get into Sherlock Holmes?
Well, everybody can buy my book, Baker Street Beat, and find out. But the long and the short of it is that I was introduced to Sherlock Holmes at a pretty young age. I'm not really sure, but maybe as young as 9, by a neighbor boy who lived in a house which had a very nice, old-fashioned, built-in bookcase. And on these bookcases were these very old volumes about Sherlock Holmes. Well, I learned later on that they weren't really as special as I thought, because they were reprint editions. The Grosset and Dunlap or A.L. Burt, something like that, some cheap reprint editions. However, they were old. They probably dated back to around 1900 or not long after that. And they had the original Sidney Paget illustrations in them. You know, they looked it was great. And that was my first exposure to Sherlock Holmes. And I never even encountered the old Basil Rathbone movies until many years after I had formed my own impression of what Sherlock Holmes was like, formed to a large degree by the Sidney Paget illustrations as well as reading the stories. So my first essay in Baker Street Beats starts out saying something like, for me it didn't start with Basil Rathbone. And the reason I said that is for a lot of people of a certain age in particular, that's their idea of Sherlock Holmes. I always had my own idea of Holmes in my head rather than one formed by an actor.
Good, awesome. So I guess, is Sherlock Holmes your favorite character in the canon, or is it someone else?
Interesting question. I don't know that I think in terms of favorite characters. I certainly have an affinity for Watson. And I think the reason is I could never imagine being Sherlock Holmes, but I could imagine being Watson.
Right.
So I wrote a fantasy radio play, which appears in Baker Street Beat, in which a modern-day detective finds himself mysteriously transported not into Sherlock Holmes's body, but into Watson's body. And he goes along with the great detective. I think all of us can kind of imagine doing that better than we can imagine really being Sherlock Holmes.
It's true. He like a lot of other people have said, like, he's the everyman, and everyone sort of wants to be in that position where you're best friends with this magnificent, like, extraordinary human being, and you get to go on these adventures, but you don't have to do all the really hard work.
Yeah, and he really is the everyman, and that's why I think for so many of us, It was such a breath of fresh air to see him presented that way in the Jeremy Brett series rather than the bumbling idiot of the Nigel Bruce rendition.
Yeah,
because we all know that he wasn't like that at all.
Yeah, and I'm glad that's been sort of now pushed aside with more and more adaptations of showing Watson how he actually is.
Yeah.
For sure.
His day has come.
Yes, finally. The redemption of John Watson. So what is your favorite story from the canon?
You know, the key is in how you ask that question. Because I used to think that the answer was The Hound of the Baskervilles, or for short stories, The Red-Headed League. And then I realized that really the question I was answering is, what is my favorite mystery? Those are my favorite mysteries in the canon. But really my favorite story in the canon is His Last Bow, because it's, well, the subtitle says, it's an epilogue of Sherlock Holmes. And it's so beautifully written in that scene-setting first paragraph, and then, you know, the way it ends. I mean, both of those, it's got to be like the best ending and the best beginning in the whole canon. And then just, I don't know, the relationship between Holmes and Watson, I just think it's a great story. Not a mystery at all, really, but a great story.
Yeah, I like that. I like that answer. That is a different answer. And last question, what's your favorite adaptation?
Well, as I said, I concentrate more on reading than the different media types, so that's interesting. My favorite movie might have been the Christopher Plummer Murder by Decree, although I haven't seen that in a long time. Another really fun movie, of course, is Without a Clue. My favorite, I'll answer a question that you didn't ask. My favorite story that fits into the general category of pastiches, you know, written stories,
mm-hmm.
is a very unusual one called The Final Solution. Have you ever heard of it or read
yes,
it?
Yes, yes, yes.
That is my favorite because, as you know, it presents Sherlock Holmes as a very old man in a book by Michael Chabrin and just very, very well written. Never even refers to Holmes by name, but we know who he's talking about.
Exactly. So you have written two books so far, right? Correct me if I'm wrong.
I've written two published books in the Sherlock Holmes / mystery genre.
Right.
I've written two books already published about religion and media. That happened about a decade ago. And, you know, I may have lost count of some, but at one point I think I counted I had written 11 unpublished mystery novels.
Looking on the back cover, you got this awesome deerstalker and bow tie going on. I love bow ties.
Well, thank you. I wear them as often as possible.
Good for you. The bow tie is, it's coming back, I feel. Bow tie is awesome.
I'm doing my best to make it popular.
Yes. So I guess my question is, what sort of spurned you to start writing mystery novels?
To start writing them or start writing them again? I had basically kind of given up after many, many years. I'm not sure how many, certainly 10 plus years of working very hard at it. As I said, I had written more than 10, I think 11 unpublished mystery novels. And I succeeded in getting an agent. I think they had some value, but for whatever reason, they never clicked. Well, a few years ago, long after I'd given this up, about 3 years ago, I decided that I had had, it just occurred to me that I'd had a number of things published about Sherlock Holmes, short pieces and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that I wanted to put them together in a book just for, you know, posterity, you know, so that archaeologists could find it in the future or something, I don't know, or my kids. I'm not sure what I had in mind, but I wanted to preserve these things. And I realized that there weren't all that many of them, so I added two new pieces. One was kind of a nostalgic piece about my life with Sherlock Holmes, you know, when I discovered Sherlock Holmes and how he's been with me through the years. And the other was, well, it was kind of late addition to this, was an account of a trip that my best friend and I and our wives made to the Reichenbach Falls just a few years ago.
Oh,
3 years ago, I think. Yeah. So I put these together in a book, and I call it Baker Street Beat, and my idea was just to self-publish it. And I could never figure out how to get that self-publishing thing to work. So it just lay there. And I have some very good friends, Carolyn and Joel Center, operate a company called Classic Specialties, also known as the Sherlock Holmes Shop. And they sell books and all kinds of items related to Sherlock Holmes. And I was telling them about this, and they said, well, you ought to try MX Publishing. They publish a lot of books about Sherlock Holmes. So I sent Steve MX an email and said, would you be interested in looking at this? Responded the same day from London, which really impressed me. And I was really shocked that 10 days later, I was looking at my iPhone, driving home from a vacation in Savannah, Georgia, and I got an email that said, we love your book. We want to publish it. Well,
yay.
Part of what he wanted to require of me was that I start a blog. So I thought, well, that's fine. I've done a blog before. I can create a blog. So I started looking through my trunk of old material related to Sherlock Holmes, thinking I'd find some material in there to start a blog. And I found a mystery novel that I had completely forgotten about writing called No Police Like Holmes. And I did a substantial amount of rewriting. It's kind of fascinating how much things have changed in 22 years.
Yes.
I had to get rid of phone booths and add in iPhones, and I had to change all the places where people are smoking in public buildings because you can't do that anymore.
Can't do that anymore.
Yeah, so there's lots of technological and social changes in 22 years. But, you know, I am really, really grateful to all those publishers who didn't buy the book before, because I think it's a much, much stronger book than it was before. I hope that it's funny. That's what it's supposed to be. But there's also kind of a nice love story, which continues in the sequel, which is called Holmes Sweet Holmes. And it's already finished. That also was written about 22 years ago. It's finished, but I'm working on editing it and getting it all in good shape, and that should be out next spring. And I have ideas for many more books than I will ever be able to write. And I look forward to writing as many as I can before I check out.
Fantastic. And the writing is very funny. I've been giggling. And I really like it when books, especially I think Sherlock Holmes books, they don't take themselves too seriously. Mm-hmm. It's very good, but there's also like the sort of like quirky, sort of like snarky little bits in it that I think is quite funny.
Yeah, in one of my descriptions of the book, I said that the book takes Holmes seriously, but not Holmesian.
Exactly, and I think that's important.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you went to Reichenbach Falls, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, but I need to ask everyone who's been there. It's not as impressive as I thought it would be. What were your feelings?
Well, that's the best part of that little essay is we happened to be there at a time when the falls were turned off.
Turned off?
I know. It sounds impossible, but what happens is that at certain times of the year, they actually divert the falls for hydraulic power. So compared to what it normally is, apparently what we saw was just a trickle. And so that's part of the humor, I think, of that particular essay, is how, you know, we get all this trouble to get to the Reichenbach Falls, and they're turned off? You're kidding. How can this be?
On and off.
But it was still a wonderful experience to actually, and to tell you the truth, it there's an element of it that was very personal for me, because the person I was with was my best friend. He was the best man at my wedding. He and I both read Sherlock Holmes together when we were in the seventh grade. All through college, we and a third friend of ours, who could qualify to be a Baker Street babe, I think, our friend Peggy, the three of us would get together. We called ourselves the Three Students. We would get together sometimes with other people, one of whom was my future wife, and we would read Sherlock Holmes stories aloud, taking parts. That and a little bit of wine was called a Sherlock Holmes party.
Awesome.
Anyway, Steve is the person that I was with when we did this. You know, our wives chose to stay behind and not make the trek, and, you know, we walked together for an hour up the Reichenbach Falls, and at the end of it, we found this plaque saying, you know, on this spot, Sherlock Holmes and Professor Moriarty, you know, and actually it kind of gives me a bit of a chill just talking about it. It was a wonderful experience, and the museum there is very nice, too.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it's like one of like my, like, you know, pilgrimage spots I want to get to, but I'm always going to be like, I'm just going to make jokes the entire time, because it's not that impressive of a waterfall. I'm like, you would survive that.
Well, yeah, you certainly don't have to be anybody special to be able to climb it. It's like, you know, it's a footpath, but climbing doesn't quite say it. You're really just walking up.
Even better.
But you see a lot of goats along the way.
The dangerous goats of Reichenbach Falls.
An aspect of my new book, which I think is, I hope is quite funny. The murder victim is somebody who has made a new movie translating Sherlock Holmes from Victorian London to 1920s New Orleans in a movie. And the movie is called 221B Bourbon Street. And so, as part of the plot of the movie, it ends with Sherlock Holmes and Professor Moriarty going off of Niagara Falls.
See, that's much more impressive. I could that one. Because, like, when I was, like, reading it when I was younger, like, when I was hearing about, like, oh, he fell off a waterfall, that's immediately what I thought of, because I'm from the East Coast. I'm like, oh, they went off something like Niagara Falls. And then I think the first time I ever Googled a picture of Reichenbach Falls, I was like, what? With that?
Well, the water may not be as impressive, but it's pretty tall.
There's, like, rocks and stuff, but he's, like, disappeared. I don't know. I'm not ragging on ACD here. I'm just saying. So another reason, I suppose, interviewing you is that we are on the same team for the Great Sherlock Holmes debate. Woo!
Yes. I'm proud to be on the same team with the babes.
Yeah. So Team BBC Sherlock. So I guess, why did you choose Sherlock above Guy Ritchie and, I guess, the much later edition of the traditionalist?
Well, initially, I have a strong preference for the Cumberbatch BBC Sherlock over the Guy Ritchie, Robert Downey Jr. film, because I feel that the TV series is much more faithful to the character of Sherlock Holmes, even though it's brought forward into modern times. But, you know, the way I've started to think about it, actually, though, is it's not so much an interpretation or reinterpretation of Holmes as an homage to Holmes. You know what I mean? It's kind of a tribute to Holmes in a way. Whereas, by contrast, it seems to me that the film Sherlock is kind of a nice movie in some ways. I like the plot, but I don't think those characters are Holmes and Watson. I think they're two different characters that have been given the names Holmes and Watson and a few of the characteristics of Holmes and Watson.
Yeah.
So I think the more difficult question is, why did I stay with the with BBC Sherlock rather than moving to the traditionalist? Because I am a rather traditionalist. I much prefer the original stories, for example, to any pastiches. And one of the things I don't like about the pastiches is that they move away from the original. Well, BBC Sherlock moves pretty far away from the original in some senses. However, you know, I don't think that any traditionalist presentation is really perfect either, because they always wind up taking liberties.
Of course.
You know, does anybody want to say that the Jeremy Brett's The Last Vampire is true? The Adventure of the Sussex Vampire? I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a important thing to note, because everyone sort of thinks of the traditionalist as sort of like the perfect like incarnation. It's like this is what it should always be. And like, there's always going to be liberties with any adaptation that's ever made, because you have to change things from the text anyways, because some things just won't translate, some things are difficult, yada, yada, yada. And it's been said like by multiple outlets saying that BBC Sherlock, yes, you plucked them out of the Victorian era and plopped them in 21st century London, but the characters are so very much so Sherlock Holmes and John Watson, whereas Guy Ritchie, they took inspiration. I think Guy Ritchie himself has even said this, like, they took inspiration from the canon, but they have no pretenses that they are making Arthur Conan Doyle Sherlock Holmes. Like, and they've said that for sure. So, I don't know, what did you think when this was all announced? Because there's a lot of really negative reactions, as well as some really positive ones. What did you think?
Oh, well, I think it's healthy. Kieran McMullen, you know, is on the other side. He's on the He's one of the authors that's also published by my publisher, MX Publishing, Kieran McMullen, the author of Watson's Afghan Adventure, and then the upcoming book, Sherlock Holmes and the Irish Rebels, which I've read in manuscript. And he said to me on Facebook, it should be a lot of fun as long as nobody takes it too seriously.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I think that's important, because really all we're talking about here is taste. And I always try to make it clear whenever I do a book review, it's not up to me to tell anybody what you should enjoy or not enjoy. I'm just giving you my opinion and maybe tossing out a few thoughts that might help you decide whether you would be interested in this book or movie, whatever it is I'm reviewing. But you can't argue taste.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think any of us are going into it to, like, be like, ours is so much better, you're stupid, yeah. Like, that's not what
that would be mature, wouldn't it?
I know, right? Because we all do take it, like, seriously, but this is meant for fun, and it's not, like, a pissing contest. Like, it shouldn't turn into that, which I think is what people assume it's going to be. But I'm excited. I'm also very nervous. But I think it'll be good. Are you going to be there when it's actually happening?
You know, I don't know whether I can be or not, because I'm called to jury duty that week.
That's right.
And I may be able to be free that day, and I may not. It just depends on whether I'm assigned to be on a jury that particular day. I certainly would like to be there.
Oh, jury duty. Blast you. I'm shaking my fist. I can't see, but I'm shaking my fist.
You know, I just thought of a new argument. You want to hear it?
Yes.
It just occurred to me as we were talking that of course, we've all noticed that the BBC Sherlock modernisms are all very, very appropriate. Of course, Sherlock Holmes would summon Watson by text, not by telegram, right? But the neat thing is that translated into the modern era, with all of the advantages of modern police technology that Sherlock Holmes didn't have, the Holmes of BBC Sherlock is not a fossil. I mean, even in today's modern environment, the unique individual brain still has something to contribute.
Exactly, sure.
The spirit of Sherlock Holmes still has a great value, even in this age of corporate sleuthing, you might call it. You know what I mean? Everything is done by, like, a group of people. And even in a lot of, let's say, television, a lot of shows would have group heroes, you know, like CSI or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a
like
whole group of people. And
audiences love this stuff.
Yeah, and I can see the appeal of that. But it's kind of neat to know that there's still a place for the lone reasoner.
Yes, there is, and he does it brilliantly.
Yeah. But my friend Felicia Carparelli, who is also published by our publisher, MX Publishing, in her delightful book, Murder in the Library. And anyway, we had a conversation about this, about BBC Sherlock, and part of her theory is, and I'm like, well, what is this with women? Why is BBC Sherlock attracting so many women? And she said, we'd all like to date him.
Yeah. Though, coming back to Sherlock, he's a bit of a dick. I'm just going to go out and say that. He kind of is.
Of course.
But it's sort of that, like, attraction thing. Like, I shouldn't be attracted to you, but I am.
Well, he's the bad boy.
Yeah. Like you said,
sometimes attracted to the bad boy. And in this case, the advantage is the bad boy is a good boy.
Yes.
You get both at once.
I know, right? It's like, can I just date the 221B boys? That'd be great. Yeah, it definitely has attracted a lot more women viewers, especially young women. But it's not a bad thing. I've known multiple people who they've watched the BBC's Sherlock series, and then they picked up the books. So I've been calling it a gateway drug. It's been a great one.
Well, I have to admit, I'm loath to admit this, but I have to admit that a friend of mine, single woman in her mid-50s, started reading Sherlock Holmes and really loved it, and her gateway drug was the Sherlock Holmes movie. Kind of surprises me that, you know, if you like the movie, you would necessarily like the stories because they're pretty different. But
yeah.
In fact, whatever works.
Yeah, I mean, if it gets you interested, great, whatever. If it's Jude Law's Pimp Kane, or if it's, you know, Cumberbatch's, like, fabulous hair, like, whatever it is.
Yeah.
If it works, it works. And I think that's a good thing. And this isn't a comparison I want to make, but go with me on this.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people were saying with the Twilight series that it's, like, it's a good thing because it's getting teenagers to read again, even though it's Twilight and it's horrific. So it's, like, oh, I guess if they're reading, and it's sort of like a gateway to reading other books, even if they're all just freaking vampire books, whatever. It's getting people to read again, which, you know, I mean, it's a good thing. So it's saying, like, anything Sherlock Holmes, if whether it's, you know, Guy Ritchie, the young Sherlock Holmes, a horrible sci-fi movie where they're battling, like, dinosaurs in London, if that does it for you, great. Just pick up books and read them. Great.
Yeah, with all of this, I'm sure the Conan Doyle heirs are much regretting the expiration of copyright laws.
Indeed. They still have a hold on the final volume in the United States, but otherwise it's clear. Yeah, they have one little thing, but I think it expires next year. They won't have it for much longer. Yeah, so you have... So this is it like a sequel to No Police Like Holmes, or is it just...
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's a romance that begins with the Watson character and his lady love in No Police that is carried through and, in fact, kind of reaches an important point in the next book.
Fantastic.
Tell you, there's one other thing I could say. I was recently at a book fair here in Cincinnati, but attract people from all over. It's kind of a regional thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on a panel talking about the reinventing classics. You know, there was a guy there who had illustrated every single page of Moby Dick. There were two people there who had written books featuring characters from Jane Austen. And then there I was. And I really encountered so many people who have an attraction to Sherlock Holmes. I did very well selling my books that day. But what I particularly remember was this man who came up with his daughter, and I'm not very good at guessing ages, but she might have been middle school. She could have been maybe a little bit older than that, but not mm-hmm. very. And I said, what's your favorite Sherlock Holmes? And she said, The Hound of the Baskervilles. And she opened up her mouth, and she had all this metal in her mouth and and rubber bands. And it was just sweet. I mean, she asked her, you know, well, have you read some Sherlock Holmes? That was the first question, I think, and she said, I've read all of them.
No.
You know, so I was asking her about what was her favorite and all that. And I don't know, to me it was just so touching that her dad was there with her, and you know, he bought a copy of Baker Street B for her. And wherever she is, I hope she's enjoying the book. But it was just nice to see so many people who like Sherlock Holmes at one level or another. I mean, obviously some of them have never read much Sherlock Holmes, but maybe they will.
Yeah, for sure, and here's hoping. So all of you listening, if you haven't actually read the stories, go do it. We're telling you to. Go do it.
There's no substitute.
Exactly. There really is. And you'll love them, I promise.
Oh, yeah.
It's fun.
We all do.
So other than the sequel to No Place Like Home, do you have any other things that you're planning to release in the future?
Yes, I do. I have another book that was written about 20 years ago based on what I think is a rather fun concept. It's called School for Sleuths. You know, there are like barber colleges where you can go and get your hair done at a really cheap price by students. This is a detective agency.
Oh, gosh.
all the detectives are students. And it is just a whole kaleidoscope of unusual characters, you know, old people who are retired, young people. Every one of them is an eccentric character. And it's written in the third person. And so you follow each of these, but the main character, the detective, is a man by the name of Francis Aloysius Finn. And he hires this widow named Hillary Kendrake to be his secretary. Well, it turns out she's actually smarter than he is. and so she always has a major role in solving the mysteries. And it was originally going to be a series, but, you know, looking at this manuscript from 20 years ago, it would be just too hard to update it because of the kinds of things that they get into and the way they investigate. So I'm hoping it'll be published eventually, but I want to do it as a book that's set in the 1990s. And because of that, I'm not so sure if I want to do any more of those, because I'd have to do a lot of research about the 1990s.
Ah, the 90s, my childhood. Good times.
I have another idea for a story that's set in the early 20s, and Sherlock Holmes would be a character, but would not be the main character. And one of the people who would be a main character is T.S. Eliot.
Oh, cool. I love T.S. Eliot.
I do, too. That's why I had the idea. So the main character would be an American journalist living in London, working for the Central Press Syndicate, and T.S. Eliot is a friend of his. He meets him because the hero's cousin had been involved in a romance with T.S. Eliot. And so he gets to go with T.S. Eliot, and Eliot becomes his, not a Watson, but sort of a companion in solving a series of murders of people who had all been criminals, but nothing could ever be proved on them, including a man who was once a member of Moriarty's version of the Baker Street Irregulars.
Okay.
So, yeah, I have ideas in answer to your question. But I'm really interested in the series, the Sebastian McCabe series, and you know, I hope that I can sell enough books that my publisher will want to keep publishing them so I can keep writing them, because I'm finding it a lot of fun.
Well,
and I think each one can have a little bit of a nod towards Sherlock Holmes, maybe less and less as the series goes along, though.
Yeah, sort of make a stand on its own two feet sort of thing.
Exactly. Well put.
Okay. Well, I look forward to that. I wish you the best of luck. Everyone, go buy Dan Andriacco's books. Are they available, like, on Amazon. You can go to MX Publishing and get them there. Also, our Baker Street Babes bookshop, we sell it. Woo! So buy them there.
Thank you for that.
Yes. So, yeah, I know. Any parting remarks?
My parting remark is always remember, though he might be more humble, there's no police like Holmes.
Brilliant. Perfect. Thank you so much for...
It's been a delight.
Yeah, no, my pleasure, for sure.
To check out Charlotte's blog, go to barefootonbakerstreet.wordpress.com. And to check out Dan's blog, you go to bakerstreetbeat.blogspot.com. To buy both of their books and others from MX Publishing, go to bakerstreetbabesbookshop.com. It's easy. It's up there. And you'll be helping supporting the podcast. So go buy their books. They're awesome.
If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you to unmind? And you're upset because it was brand new. Then some joker came and snatched an old one. But it's no joke, I smell a rat or two. These boots are from Toronto, they're a punch and flew. One of these days, these boots are gonna be the death of you. These boots are from Toronto, so please.